Today on Family Talk.
It's rare to meet someone who epitomizes the servant leadership of our Savior Jesus Christ. But Mama Maggie is one such person. On today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, Dr. Meg Meeker interviews Marty McCary on the woman nicknamed the Mother Teresa of Egypt. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to enjoy an interview with Marty McCary on his new book titled Mama Maggie, the untold story of one woman's mission to love the forgotten children of Egypt's garbage slums. Now, for those of you who have been listening with us for a few years, you're aware of the fact that once a year we travel to the International Christian Retail Show to interview a large list of guests, and then we get to share those programs with you throughout the year. Today's broadcast is one of those special interviews. As a result, you might notice that the show floor was kind of loud, and you'll hear a little bit of background noise. But before we get into today's program, let me remind you of the exclusive opportunity only available this month. For every donation of $30 or more, Family Talk will say thank you by sending you a copy of my book, Wanting to Believe, along with a corresponding DVD from our Building a Family Legacy film series. To take advantage of this offer, give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by clicking the tab at drjamesdobson.org. So here now is Dr. Meg Meeker as she begins today's program with Marty McCary from the floor of the International Christian Retail Show on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Dr. Meg Meeker, and I'm here at the International Christian Retail Show in Orlando, Florida, with a new friend, an extraordinary man who has a wonderful book. I hope it becomes a movie one day. And the title is Mama Maggie, the untold story of one woman's mission to love the forgotten children of Egypt's garbage slums. The author is Marty McCary. He is a physician. He lives in Baltimore. He teaches at Johns Hopkins Medical School. He is an extraordinary man. Marty, thanks for joining me.
Great to be with you, Meg.
This is really great. So we've just been talking off air a little bit, and you've lived an extraordinary life.
I've had a lot of great opportunities. I'm an immigrant, was born in England. My family's originally from Egypt and was raised in the Northeast, Pennsylvania, and been in that area my entire life.
When did you know you wanted to be a doctor?
My father is a physician, took care of leukemia and lymphoma patients, and I saw that awesome trust that people had in him and the gratefulness, and I thought, being a doctor is the best job in the world.
It is.
And I still believe in that.
I do too. I do too. You know, we are privy to an intimacy in the relationship with our patients that's unmatched. But when you close those doors, you dialogue and you connect with people on a level that requires a tremendous amount of trust and confidence. And I just love that.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, it is amazing. And I never take it for granted.
I was just thinking about the other day in the emergency room, somebody will trust me or any of us as physicians to put a knife to their skin or tell us secrets they wouldn't even tell their spouse. Just because you're the doctor.
Right.
That's a tremendous privilege.
Tremendous privilege. Tremendous privilege. What kind of physician are you?
I'm a surgical oncologist and GI surgeon in the Department of Surgery at Johns Hopkins, and I also teach health policy in the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health.
Because you have a degree in public health?
Public health and health outcomes, patient safety has been my background, and that's what I've spent most of my career doing research on.
In addition to writing and going on the Today Show and just flying around the country sort of doing everything.
It's a good life.
Yeah, you have a lot of energy.
I have a lot of great opportunities and I'm very thankful.
So you have a vibrant practice. You still practice medicine. How did you get into writing?
My greatest passion is for accountability in healthcare.
You wrote a New York Times bestseller, Unaccountable. And when was that released?
2 years ago. It's had a great run.
Yep. Mama Maggie.
Yeah.
Who is Mama Maggie?
Mama Maggie is a woman I came to know when I heard that I was related to someone in Egypt who is emerging as a Mother Teresa type of figure and has gained the sort of the nickname the Mother Teresa of Egypt. And she takes care of tens of thousands of kids. And she's been doing this for 25 years with a giant group of 500 employees and staff and volunteers. And they've been doing it quietly because they, with the old government regime, they didn't want anyone to know. And you talk about doing things for no credit. They've been living in the trash, in the garbage slums, with these families that burrow in the trash, and they have all the standard problems of regular society times 10. Child abuse, neglected homes, and fathers that are deadbeat, not around, and poverty, and can't eat, and illiterate. And she just took a day with her church to go visit their Coptic, which is the name for Christians in Egypt. They've been getting crushed, if you've been seeing the news. Mm-hmm. The story no news network will talk about, a story in the Middle East that the Christians in the Middle East are getting crushed with all the stuff going on in each country. But she went with her Coptic church to go visit the garbage slums, met a child on that day who looked just like her daughter and couldn't sleep, and went back to visit that child a few times on her own. The child took her back to her home, the child's home, where she introduced Mama Maggie to her seven other brothers and sisters, and she just broke down and decided, you know, there's nobody I can call. There's no member of Congress. There's no one I can write a letter to. There's no nonprofit here I can knock on the door and say, go take care. She just had to do something. And she just decided to keep going back. Eventually, over a few years, recruited friends, started working part-time doing this volunteer work. She came from wealth, unlike Mother Teresa. That's the difference that's striking. Mother Teresa came from poverty and took a vow for poverty. Mama Maggie came from wealth and slowly sold her
possessions. Where did Mama Maggie grow up?
She's 100% Egyptian, part of our original Egyptian family, the family that, you know, I have heritage to.
So you're related to her.
I'm related to her. I heard about what was happening. I never knew her. I wanted to go over because I heard they needed a doctor to help with the medical care of the kids.
And so you just weren't busy enough. And you thought, I might as well go to Egypt to help out.
Well, I've done, you've done, we've all done these medical missions trips to try to help.
Yes.
And you try to help, but you know, I got there. I'm a pancreas surgeon at Johns Hopkins. I need CAT scans and MRIs. I got there. I was useless. I had no idea what to do.
Don't you feel helpless?
I felt so helpless.
You don't have all your stuff with you.
I didn't have my stuff. You as a pediatrician could have done more good, but I ended up just watching and learning. And I saw this amazing story that was getting the notoriety of international human rights groups, members of Congress, and around that time she was nominated for the Nobel Prize. And authors had started to approach her. Can we tell your story? Well, of course, with the sensitivities of Islam, she didn't want somebody mistreating the story. So she turned to me and said, would you, I know you're a writer, I know you have a successful New York Times bestseller, will you tell our story? And I thought, gosh, I don't think so.
Talk about trust again.
Trust, yeah. I was able to recruit Ellen Vaughn, who wrote a lot with Chuck Colson, and together we had the privilege of telling her story in this book, Mama Maggie.
Mm, wow. How long did it take you to write?
About a year and a half. It was during the protests and demonstrations and burnings, and we, you know, waded through riots and walked around tanks and dealt with curfews.
And you scared?
No, because, well, I live in Baltimore.
There you go.
And
enough said.
Crime is relative. Yeah. Crime is relative. Mm-hmm. But it was the Egyptian people have a vibrance that you see all over the Middle East, and it's this just inspirational sense of hope, no matter how.
And
desperate.
You were living in Cairo?
We were in Cairo. We
and that's where Mama Maggie is.
She's in Cairo. And these famous garbage districts go on for miles. Tens of thousands of kids live in the trash. The odor's awful. You think, what could come out of this that's good? They have 100 schools now that they've built in the trash district.
Oh.
They've got three factories that they bought so that they could teach the kids vocational skills, and they go out and get jobs, and many of them do. And for years, they go out and get jobs, and they send the money to their families to come out of the garbage district. And the story is an amazing story of determination and plight.
What's the difference between poverty here in the U.S. and poverty there?
I think
the people.
I think there's zero sense of entitlement over there. Now, we don't have that among the poor here, but you do see it sometimes. And there's this sense of, I'm a victim of society in some places, and there's a sense of, this is my lot. And the idea of coming out of that is terrible in both situations. The idea that, you know, when Mama Maggie asked a child, what would you like to do when you grow up? It's like it was an impossible thought.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't know what they have to choose from.
They don't know.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and some kids have never really been called by their name before. Can you imagine? Or they've never been asked, what are your dreams? No one has ever asked them, what do you dream about doing someday? And she's asking them. And that's why they call her Mama. They love being around her. She's sold everything of her own because she finds more happiness being with these poor kids. She sold her wedding ring. She wears this silly white t-shirt all the time. We said, can we buy you another white t-shirt? She said, no, I'm fine. She just wades around in the trash visiting families and kids.
How old is Mama Maggie?
She's in her 60s now. They started the ministry about 25 years ago. You know, I don't know if you noticed the connection recently, but when ISIS killed the 21 Egyptian Christians in Libya on the beach, something that made national news.
And yeah.
Seven of those 21 people were from her ministry. They were kids that grew up in the garbage district. They went to her schools. They learned how to read and write. They went to her vocational factories, the ones they bought for training. They went out and got jobs. They went to Libya, like many poor Egyptians do, to get work, to send money to their family, and that's where ISIS captured them. And she is now using the story of the Christians that she knew, the seven that she knew, killed by ISIS in Libya, as a story about forgiveness to the kids, how to break the cycle of revenge and forgive your enemies. And she says to the kids, look at how those being killed, the Christians, were looking to heaven and didn't turn on their faith. They were offered the opportunity to denounce their Christian faith and convert, and they looked to heaven without any hesitation. And she's using that as a lesson of who we have as our Father in heaven and to forgive our enemies. That's amazing. The Middle East needs a lot of things. The number one thing they need to do is break the cycle of revenge. And that's what we've been observing as we were there, really as reporters telling the story of Mama Maggie from a journalistic standpoint.
Did you go and live there for a while? Or how long were you with her?
We were with her for about 6 different weeks. Ellen Vaughn, my amazing co-author, and I each split up the time, and we each took about 3 trips over, interviewing her staff, interviewing her family, interviewing those that she works with, interviewing the kids that would come up through the ministry, graduate, and come back to work full-time for the ministry. That's a lot of the staff. A lot of the 500 full-time staff were kids, and now they're working in the ministry. It's an amazing story. You know, we think of ministries and organizations as having a CEO and a CFO and a marketing office and 5 fundraisers. You can't even get a business card out of them. They're just walking around in the trash taking care of kids.
And they probably don't even worry about where the money's going to come from or anything.
It seems to come in. A few philanthropists around the world have noticed what's happening. You know, I talked to a very wealthy Christian philanthropist, and you know what he told me? He said, you know, Marty, it's actually hard to use your money for good in the world. There's a lot of things that are not sustainable. There's things that can be counterproductive or create tension with the local people in a country. For example, if you dump food off in Ethiopia, well, you could put the local farmers out of business. If you go and do cleft palate surgery in another country and they have a complication, it could alienate the local surgeons who could have done it. But it's hard to do good in the world sometimes in a big, sustainable way.
Exactly.
And it's so refreshing when you see a ministry, and there's hundreds of them, thousands of them out there, that are purely, authentically helping people with what they're doing.
What's Mama Maggie's background? Where did she grow up? What's her family like?
She came from a village where my mother also came from, called Nag Hammadi. They found some famous biblical scrolls there, actually, and it's a small village in southern Egypt that's been on the map in archaeology for the discovery of these scrolls. And then her father, a physician, became well known in the country during a plague in Egypt. He moved to the city to work for the Department of Health during this epidemic of an infectious disease, and then became a prominent doctor in Cairo. Mama Maggie grew up in wealth, upper middle class, became a marketing executive, was a socialite, wore this incredible fashionable clothing, shopped in Europe. We've got photographs of her life before and after in the book, Mama Maggie. And then she taught at the very prestigious American University in Cairo. And she was a professor of business. And she was just the socialite. Everybody wanted to be near her. Every
Married,
night she had plans.
Children.
Had a wonderful husband who's still supportive to this day of the ministry. Two wonderful kids. And she just had what everyone thought was the perfect life. Very attractive woman. And it's amazing because so many of us think of that life as a life associated with happiness. And she tells the story how she has found more personal joy, happiness, and purpose in life. One of her right-hand staff in the book tells the story how she would interior decorate her home because she felt some emptiness. And she would decorate her home and think, I need to redo this.
Right.
Seven different times she redecorated her home thinking, once it gets perfect, I'm going to be happy.
I'll be happy.
And then she met Mama Maggie one day, and Mama Maggie just told her the words, will you come serve the poor with me? She had never met her before. And she is now a full-time staff worker.
Wow.
And you see all these people touched by Mama Maggie in Cairo.
Mm. And just to watch her, how has Mama Maggie changed Marty?
Well, I tell you, you come back from Cairo dealing with the logistical hassles over there and then seeing the kids live in the garbage district, seeing doctors in Egypt come by bus to help the kids because they can't afford a car. That's how little the doctors make in Egypt, for many of the doctors, not all. And they sacrifice their entire lives and everything with no credit to help these kids. You come back into New York and you're upset a little bit at the cab driver or the ATM machine for a $2 fee. It puts everything in perspective. And the things that we use in our lexicon in the United States, for example, the word need, I mean, we define it, right? We define it, and it puts the whole world in perspective. You've traveled overseas. Yeah. People that have traveled overseas know exactly what I'm talking about. It puts life in perspective, keeps you grounded.
Very, very humbling. Does Mama Meg tell us about her own children, her own family, and how are they doing with the work that she's doing?
You know, one thing they value in the Middle East that we don't really understand, or I don't understand, having grown up in the West, is solitude with the Lord. They value spending weeks, sometimes months, in isolation to meditate, pray, read scripture, and think about the Lord. I mean, I don't have any friends that do that. I don't know about you. There, it's relatively common, if you will, among some of the Coptic community. So she retreats frequently to one of the oldest monasteries in the world in the middle of the Sinai Desert. It's amazing.
Have you seen it?
We visited there. It's incredible. We've got some pictures in the book, Mama Maggie. Her son has recently taken an oath to go to the monastery for 2 years and is living a monastic life, that of a monk, to figure out what the next step is in his life. And he's considering ministry, obviously.
And how old is he?
He's in his 30s. Mm-hmm. Now, her daughter lives in Dubai. Many of the young people in Egypt have moved to Dubai. I mean, if you're going to deal with a 20% unemployment rate and an unstable government and some other issues, but Dubai is a very attractive opportunity from a business standpoint. She lives there with her husband with three kids and one of the most recent schools and largest schools in Mama Maggie's ministry called Stephen's Children, that's the name of the organization, is called the Farah School, named after her granddaughter who is being raised in Dubai.
Mm. Wow. So how does Marty McCary, a successful surgeon at Johns Hopkins, a New York Times best-selling author, with his incredible life, so much at your fingertips, how do you stay close to Jesus?
Well, I think it's experiences like this that help remind us that we don't deserve what we have. And that's something that I get fooled on almost every week. I think, you know, there's a delay in this flight. I deserve to be treated better. I feel that somebody scheduled me for too many patients in an hour. I don't deserve to be treated like... And you start thinking, wait a minute, what do I really deserve?
Where does that come from?
Where's that come from? Where's this entitlement come from? When you look at the people interviewing for medical school, we are looking at some of the most bright, creative, well-dressed, cream of the crop of American schools. And they're doing amazing things. They're starting immunization programs, and they're inventing things, and they've done startup companies. And then we take them into our medical culture. And for 4 years, we teach them a new vocabulary. And then for 4 or 5 more years, we teach them a new ethics system, a new set of values, a new lexicon. And they come out a decade later almost like robots. Mm-hmm. And they've got a whole new sense of what's right. They are told it's okay to lie on a chart to get insurance companies to pay for something. They're taught these. And it's almost as if we create a sense of entitlement. And recognizing that that is ubiquitous in society. It's almost a societal sin, if you will, that we participate in rather than something that we really conjure up ourselves.
I don't think it's just medicine, too.
Yeah.
I think it's probably in law. Hmm. It's in a lot of perfect business, mm-hmm. don't you think?
Yeah, sure. In mm-hmm. law, you're supposed to argue the case of the other person, even if you know in your heart it's not correct. You feel that's your role, and it can shape you. And people manage it well. People understand that line of what's ethical. But the world will tell you there is no line, or you can push that further than you need to. And I think thinking about Mama Maggie in the middle of a long surgery, thinking about Mama Maggie when I'm sitting at church and we're talking about something that may not really have a big impact relative to things we could be doing, it just makes me feel more grounded. And for that, I'm forever grateful. You know, we talk about the things in the United States that we get angry about. Right now, I'm pretty frustrated with the Supreme Court of the United States over several decisions.
I just want to let our audience know you were nominated for a pretty prestigious role. What was that?
The American College of Surgeons nominated me for Surgeon General, and that was an interesting process. And I think at this point, I've realized you really have to stick to the party line. You can't speak your mind freely when you're up for those jobs. And do I want to stick to the party line for the rest of my life, or do I want to speak my mind? I want to speak my mind.
You keep speaking your mind. Yes, you do. You're one of those very creative, out-of-the-box people, and we need your voice.
Thank you.
We need your voice. The book is Mama Maggie, The Untold Story of One Woman's Mission and Love. To love the forgotten children of Egypt's garbage slums. The author is Dr. Marty McCary, along with Ellen Vaughn. Marty, God bless you.
Great to be
You're
with
a
you.
Remarkable man, and I don't think this is your last book. Somehow, I don't think it's your last book. I think we're going to be hearing a lot more from you. God bless you, and keep doing what you're doing, and don't lose that joy that you have of Christ, and stay so close to Him, because the world that you live in could pull you so quickly.
Well, great to be with you, Megan. So refreshing to see a physician think broadly about having a bigger impact in this world. Yeah. That's what we need.
We got to stick together.
Stick together.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, yeah. Megan.
Okay.
What an inspiring story of a woman who is truly making a difference in the world. If you haven't read the book, Mama Maggie, go pick up a copy today. It is such a powerful example to us all about what it means to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ in our world. We've been listening to an interview with Dr. Meg Meeker and Marty McCary here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and before we sign off for the day, let me remind you about the exciting offer I mentioned at the top of the program. For every donation of $30 or more, we'll say thank you by sending you a copy of my latest book, Wanting to Believe, along with a corresponding DVD from our Building a Family Legacy film series. To take advantage of this exclusive offer, give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by clicking the tab at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.